Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you. I have another great program for you today. Are you feeling distant or unfulfilled in your sexual relationship? Or maybe your sexual and intimate life is great, but you think it could be even more soulful and intense? Well, my guest today is Dr. Pepper Schwartz. She is a sociologist and sexologist teaching at the University of Washington in Seattle. She is the author of or co-author of over 25 books on intimacy and sexuality, and she has authored numerous magazine and website columns on sex, love, and relationships. She served as AARP's love and intimacy expert and ambassador. And most recently, she has been a matching expert on the hit television show Married at First Sight, now going into its 11th season. She is also a relationship expert for Paired, a new app for couples, which aims to make relationships happier and healthier in just 10 minutes a day. For more information about Dr. Pepper Schwartz, her work, and her prolific writings over the past 40 years, please go to pepperschwartz.com. Or for more information about the couple app called Pair, go to getpaired.com. So welcome to the program, Pepper. Great to have you with us today.
Thank you so much. You know, I've followed your work for an adult lifetime as well, and it's such a pleasure to be collaborating with you on this cast. I really appreciate you asking me.
Oh, my pleasure, and so great to have you. And as I want listeners to know, as you said, we've known each other for many, many years. And actually, Pepper, you were a mentor to me when I first decided to work in the media, as you know, and try to translate my research into the public. And I really appreciated all of that help and work and mentorship. Now, as listeners have heard, you are extremely busy. You do so much work, great work. You have two children. You recently got married to your husband, Fred, and you live on a horse ranch outside of Seattle. So tell listeners, Pepper, how do you do it all?
Well, you know, part of it is one's nature. My nature is that I have to be busy and I have to have a challenge in my life. And also, I have this vision that if it's your dream, then you figure out a way to make it happen. And, you know, as a little girl, it was horse crazy. So I decided, even though my parents never bought me a horse, that was going to be one of the things I was going to make happen one way or the other. So I think it's more of a determination to live life fully. And it's also my nature to be busy and challenged. And I think everybody has to kind of figure themselves out about who they really are and kind of go with it. And, you know, for other people, I think my life would make them crazy, but for me, it makes me happy. And that's the bottom line.
I love that answer. I think, you know, if you have a passion or a dream, as you said, you want to make it happen. And like you, I also love to be busy. And the line between work and my personal life are so similar. I mean, there's no line. So I love that answer. Thank you so much. Now, before we get to the topic of today's segment, sex and intimacy, also tell listeners just a little bit about your work on Married at First Sight, now in its 11th season. Are you enjoying the experience?
I love it. It fulfills my requirements, which is to be both intellectually and emotionally rewarding. When we do Married at First Sight, I've been on it from the beginning. It was a concept and maybe not a reality in the beginning. I wasn't sure it would work. The idea is that we would take perfect strangers who would want to get married, who would want to do this experiment, let us understand who they are, match them up, and then they would meet at the altar and get married without any knowledge of each other, and then have the 8 weeks next to go through lots of exercises we give them to try and help create that marriage and maintain it and understand each other, and then decide at the end of that if they wanted to stay married or get a divorce. And the concept was, other than, you know, the sort of drama of it all, is that if you started with a commitment, if you were somebody who'd been unable to make the relationship happen on your own, but you started with a commitment and you had the support of experts in a way that no therapist could give them, it would be, you know, you have to be living with the couple, would it make a difference? Would some of these people actually be able to make a lifetime connection? And it wasn't at all clear that this concept would work in a situation where it wasn't culturally and historically comfortable, i.e. if you were Indian from India or someone from Pakistan, or for someone with a world that approved of and to some extent enforced arranged marriages, maybe you would think you had no other choice and you would make it work. But could we do it with people in America where there was no such cultural understanding? Would the commitment help them get over the rough parts and discover who they could be together? And I'm so grateful to say that while certainly we're not at the 50% mark, about a third of our couples have stayed married, are having families, and did profit from this experience.
Oh, so that's great. A third, 33% of the couples actually, yes, when they start with commitment, that works. And that helps them then in their long-term relationships with marriages and children. That's great.
Well, we're excited about it. It's very rewarding. It makes me nuts when things go sideways when they don't have to.
Right.
People get in their own way a lot. You know that as well as anyone
yes.
in the world.
Yes.
So we can't solve everything. And let me just say that some of the matches, I think, you know, were less than ideal, that we didn't do, you know, as we didn't or couldn't do the due diligence that came up later with things that got in the way that were part of the problems of the match and not, I don't think so much people. But in general, I think it's with people of goodwill and commitment and a desire to live in an imperfect relationship in an imperfect world, I think there's a lot of latitude for who you could fall in love with and be happy with.
I like that. A lot of latitude in terms of who you could fall in love with. And I have enjoyed watching you, Pepper, on Married at First Sight. I enjoy the sociology of it. You bring up networks and family and similarity and underlying values and going into their homes and making sure that they set it up in terms of commitment and in terms of making it work down the way. So I think there are many themes as well that I've enjoyed watching your comments and the show on. So I appreciate that. Now, as we turn to sexuality and intimacy, what inspired you to focus your work, research, writing on sexuality and intimacy?
Well, I think to some extent, everybody's biography is involved. I grew up at the time, I'm 75 now, so I was at the first edge of the feminist movement sort of regeneration in this last century, and felt all the kinds of constraints that women did at that time about marriage and about what was expected of them. And we were a generation, you know, the baby boom, which was thinking like, no, we don't just want to be a homemaker. We don't want to find our identity just in our kids. We want to have the same kind of growth and challenge that men do. Mm-hmm. And so I was scared of marriage. I found it a confining idea. I was disappointed in the information and the normative things I was reading that I didn't believe in about female sexuality. There was the book of the time, I think something about everything you ever want to know about sex or whatever it was. And it was full of misinformation. And all I could say was, I don't believe this, but I had no data to prove that. Mm-hmm. So I went into the research. I had started out in graduate school at Yale in law and sociology, and not so far into it, I thought, no, I'm going to study gender. I'm going to study gender roles. I'm going to study intimacy. I'm going to study sexuality. I'm going to study the things that have been told women to women about who they are, as opposed to allow women to have the full expanse of choices and self-knowledge and opportunity. And so I was in fervor because of the times, and because to some extent that those freedoms had started to open up so I could have the freedom to pick what I wanted to study and add to the information that I thought would affect my life and that of just about every other man and woman.
Mm-hmm. And I love how background really does, and culture and what's going on in a society at the moment really does impact what we become passionate about or what we want to spend our time looking at or doing research on. And so what does sexuality mean to you, Pepper?
To me, it means like it's an essential part of every human, that we have the right to embrace, and that it should never extinguish. It's a part of our vitality. It's a part of our connection to the world. And I don't think of sex as just intercourse. I think of it as touch and intimacy and pleasure and exploration of one's deepest emotions. And I think that it's been something, there's something awful about the taboo against pleasure, period. The idea, you know, that somehow we could have too much of this, or the, you know, I mean, obviously sexuality can be rewarding or it can be scary depending on the circumstances. But to me, it means a kind of pleasure time that is a great gift to a relationship, a great gift to oneself, even if one does not have a relationship, and that can have, it's almost like a vacation from everyday life. It's a moment where fantasy and release and the deepest kinds of emotional expressions can be exercised, or just even a physical release. And I think it has so many iterations of what it is that it needs to be talked about. It needs to be given permission. It needs to be given information, because it's so important in how we feel about ourselves and our lives.
Absolutely. So important. But we both know, Pepper, that talking about sexuality and sexual needs with a partner or even friends, family members, is extremely challenging to people, yet we still need to do it, as you said. Why do you think it is so challenging to talk about sexuality?
Well, it's interesting. There's one group that it's not so hard for. And so that I take them as a model, and that's gay men. If gay men are just hanging out and having even just casual sex, much less a relationship, first thing they'll say is like, what are you into? You know, what do you like? What are we going to do together here that pleases you and pleases me? And we can just lay that out there because we want to have a good time. And I think with heterosexuals, we have been taught that there's certain ways to do this. There's certain ways to be beautiful. There's certain ways to be sexual, and that somehow we're going to fail at all of them.
Right.
So I think by the fact that we don't feel good about our bodies, or we're worried we're not performing well, or we're having fantasies that we think maybe are wrong in some way, we get all of these religious prescriptions and cultural prescriptions. So I wonder we can do anything at all sometimes, and particularly over time when we're not, you know, as beautiful in cultural ways that that we're supposed to be. Maybe we have a tummy. Maybe we have you know, we never did have the exact body weight, etc. Then we have a whole media and marketing world against us to tell us we're unworthy to be sexual. There's so many things between, you know, the proscriptions and the proscriptions against pleasure and the prescriptions about what makes you worthy enough to be sexually viable, that, you know, of course we have trouble talking about it because, you know, we have all this other stuff in our heads.
Right. All that other stuff. And as you talked about body image and not conforming to a culture's view of beauty or body type or thinness or whatever it may be, I mean, that's a lot to carry when you come into a sexual relationship, let alone talk about it with another person. And I know that you have done work and you talk a lot about strategies that can help people communicate about sex with their partner, assuming, I guess, if they're not a gay male. So what are some of those strategies that you might give to listeners about how to communicate about sex with a partner or about any with anyone?
Well, first of all, I would say, you know, do it out of the bedroom. You know, don't have this thing going on in your head. And then, you know, just saying something like, well, that's not right. Or, you know, everybody's ego is pretty fragile in this. So I think the thing is to say, you know, have a glass of wine and just say, okay, I'd love to talk about, you know, how I experience arousal, how I experience desire. Or, you know, I'd like to talk about how you do. I want to think of our sexual life as something that can grow and change and maybe just make sure that we're still on the same page. Or, you know, there's something that I would like to feel better about. Doing it in a loving way where you say, like, you know, this is a team effort. And, you know, sometimes we don't even understand, like, it's not like you're supposed to have the answers in these conversations. And you might be kind of saying, like, you know, I don't understand why I'm not getting aroused when you do X, because I love you or I'm thrilled to be with you. But it's not that I don't know what's happening. But could we experiment? Could we try some things and talk about it then? And, you know, like have kind of a fun moment where we're just trying some slightly different position or pressure or whatever. Cause you know, I want to be in a place that I'm not yet. Or you could say, if you have a pretty decent sex life going on already, say, but it's getting a little boring, like, hey, you know, I brought a book. It has all kinds of illustrations. I'd like to go through it and see if any of this would be fun for us. I mean, just to talk about it, to do it in a loving embrace, to make sure it's not critical. You know, so if maybe even if there's something that's not that you really don't like, let's say, and I've heard this one a lot, you actually don't like the way your partner kisses you. Mm-hmm. Big deal, because that's a very common thing that happens in sexuality. Saying, you know, I would like to experiment with all kinds of different kinds of kisses. You know, I've seen these things or I've read about these things and I want to see, you know, and let's do this and let's do that. And let me pick a few, you know, mm-hmm. and that could be not even a critique. It could just be that you do want to try all those things, but it's a way of trying to break a pattern that isn't working for you. It is not a good thing to suffer silently. It is not a good thing for someone to, you know, let's say be having oral sex and like thinking of a shopping list because it's just not doing it. You know, we don't want alienated relationships and sexuality or anything else. And that does require some sensitive and encouraging conversation about different ways of approaching this. You know, nobody expects somebody to get on an ice rink, have never put on ice skates, and then just ice skate beautifully. Hmm. Somehow we think that we should be immediately knowledgeable about our own and others' bodies and what works and what doesn't. Once we accept the fact that this is something that we grow into and learn more about, just like everything else in our life, we don't have to act as if we were immediately completely knowledgeable about what we like or what our partner likes or how we are together.
Mm-hmm. I love that metaphor about like when you get on a pair of skates, you can't just immediately skate. And why then do we expect us to then know about a partner's body or our own bodies or even relationships in general? It's a learning process. And I really like your ideas about don't suffer silently and using conversation in a very loving way, even using books or television shows or movies as a way to discuss and encourage different ways of doing something, even if it's kissing. Now, there is a great relationship app out there, a couple app that just launched, Pepper. It's called Paired, as you know, and you and I are both relationship experts in the app. There are about 8 or 9 relationship experts. And listeners, the app has research-based daily questions, fun quizzes that come with tips and conversation starters, and expert audio courses. And Pepper, you have one course called Sex and Intimacy. So tell us what listeners can expect from your course.
Well, I think it's a wonderful site. Paired has done a lot of research to really get experts, and I so admire that he cares about the qualifications of everybody that he is hired to do this. So when I saw your name, I immediately relaxed, because I know there's so much stuff on the internet that, you know, is out of somebody's imagination as opposed to study and research and clinical experience. So I loved working with him, because I knew who else I'd be working with, all these other people, international experts besides ourselves from the United States. So my course is really trying to look at sexuality and intimacy. So not how to take tab A and go into slot B, but rather what are the things that create sexual closeness, and what is the kind of closeness that creates sexual outcomes that are positive. So, for example, it starts early on with looking at desire and arousal. Desire and arousal sound like the same thing, but they're not. And they're, you know, a quite common academic conversation among therapists and researchers. But, you know, I want people to be able to take a look at why they want their partner or not, what kind of thing comes in between people, you know, wanting to have a sexual experience or not wanting to, and trying to look at the origins of that and to help them have desire. And then the question also, well, let's say you desire your partner, but you start having some sexual interaction and you don't feel yourself getting excited. So trying to help people in both those categories. And then as it goes on, lots of issues about like communication, how you talk about what you want, like we've been talking about, but right. Also perhaps how you talk about anything that can dampen the intimacy between you, so it short circuits sexuality before, you know, the first hand is laid on the first arm, you know, trying to figure out the kinds of things that build closeness and that embroider the world that you're in. So sexuality is a really good part of it, as opposed to the things that get in between you or make sexuality humdrum, boring, or, you know, just not adding to closeness, but in fact making you more separate.
Mm-hmm. And I really, really recommend your course, Pepper. I mean, just the many different various topics that we haven't talked about and that would help us with a partner. As you said, make it more pleasurable, make it more satisfying, and such an important part of a relationship. And I should also tell listeners that my course in the app is called Relationship Foundations, and it's all about how to maintain happiness, excitement, and passion in a relationship over time. And it's really about the building blocks to a happy, healthy relationship. So listeners, please take the time to look at a great relationship app, as Pepper said, based on research and clinical experience with some really excellent relationship experts. Now, Pepper, we only have a minute left. It went by so quickly. I could talk to you for hours. But if there's one message that you would like listeners to take away from the program, what might it be?
To embrace your sexuality. Don't think it has to disappear over the life cycle. Make sure that it's part of your reward to yourself or to your relationship, however old you are, however disabled or different you are over your life cycle. your sexuality is not something you have to lose. It's certainly something that has to be maintained. It can go away if you don't pay attention to it. But to think of it in all of its embroidery, not just as a very narrow concept, but everything from being touched to being physically intimate intercourse, for me, sexuality is a great treasure, and we shouldn't ignore it.
Good message, Pepper. Embrace your sexuality, regardless of your age, life course, difference, individuality. Thank you so much for joining us, Pepper. It's always wonderful to talk with you.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed this. It was great, Terry, and love your show, and very, very honored to be on it. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for sharing your insights, your advice, and your expertise. And again, listeners, if you want more information about Dr. Pepper Schwartz, please go to pepperschwartz.com. And if you want more information about Paired, the new app for couples which aims to make relationships happier and healthier in just 10 minutes a day, go to getpaired.com, and you can download the app right from that website. As always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. And I'm here to help all your relationships, including the one with yourself, be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's easy to understand and include in your life. So listeners, until next time, be safe, be healthy, and here's to your happy, healthy relationships.